Welcome, welcome everybody to the Worldwide Knicks podcast, episode number 77. From here, right, directly from Portugal on this Super Bowl Sunday. We're recording right here because we don't care that much about the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. sorry. We're Europeans, whatever. From here, I'm here from Portugal speaking with to you. Alongside me is Alex, as usual. Alex, how are you feeling this fine evening?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I didn't even know the Super Bowl was on until yesterday. I thought it was next week, which just shows you how little we talk about it, though. So yeah, we had to up the American style of our pod presence this week, I think, just to desperation.
Yeah.
Oh no, the Super Bowl's on. Let's sort that out. Get somebody on that actually knows what they're talking about.
Let's try and get someone who actually knows what's happening in the NFL. Because the Giants suck again, so I stopped watching. As you do. So yeah, we have a guest, as Alex alluded. It's a familiar face, one might say.
A guest.
Yeah, it's his home. He's speaking from we're in the evening. He is in the afternoon at 3 p.m. there. It's Omar. Omar is back. What are you doing here, man? What's happening?
I figured I've been wanting to jump on episode for a few weeks, guys, because I've been really enjoying your one-on-one back and forth and the randomness that ensued last week, especially just kind of recapping Knicks from a decade ago. But to your guys' point about the Super Bowl, it's kind of like Champions League final here, and when it happens, no one here cares except for me, and I feel like over there in Europe, that's how you guys feel about the Super Bowl, which is rightful, but happy to be back and talking to you guys a little bit about the Knicks.
So just to get this clear, I know one team is in the Super Bowl, one of the teams in the Super Bowl. So it's the Chiefs, right?
Taylor Swift playing.
Taylor Swift's team, yeah.
That's why I know it, basically. Who's the other team, by the way?
Knicks fan Taylor Smith as well.
Personal friend of Amari Stoudemire, Taylor Swift.
The 49ers, okay.
49ers, San Francisco.
Against the Chiefs, okay. Mm-hmm. So just to get this Super Bowl stuff out of the way, Omar, you as an expert, who do you got in this finals, in these Super Bowl finals?
You guys remember for a while when LeBron was in the East, and anytime anybody would play LeBron, you just bet on LeBron, right? That's kind of how I feel about the Chiefs. Like, Patrick Mahomes is just at such a high level. It just feels foolish to, bet against them. So I'm going with the Chiefs. To be honest, from a rooting interest, a very low for me. It's just like, here's the Chiefs, they're like the next dynasty. Okay, cool, whatever. 49ers aren't a super exciting team. And, so it's kind of like an expected matchup, but not necessarily one that you're super excited about. But, hopefully it'll be a good game. Get Usher at the halftime show. So that's cool. But yeah, for me, it's I got the Chiefs in a close one tonight.
I did see one thing earlier on. It was a pre-draft thing about Mahomes, and he was getting torn apart, just saying that he had no footwork. He was so slow, and then it kind of reminded me a little bit about how the kind of Jalen Brunson in the draft. People just totally disrespected him and just said this, that, and the other, and he'd never amount to anything, so it's kind of cool sometimes to see these guys that just use that as fuel to kind of get to where they are. Although Brunson says he doesn't react to kind of prove people wrong, but I'm sure there's something in
there. There's something there, no one's completely oblivious, right? Everybody is. You're hearing a little bit at least.
Well, I mean, Brunson and Hart are obviously on quite active on Knicks Twitter, so I'm sure they hear the noise all the time.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So just a little bit of fun. I obviously searched Super Bowl to get the 49ers name. Mm-hmm. Five news prints appeared in my screen. Three of them are about Taylor Swift, so Yeah.
I mean, that shows you how, like, the big how eh, the whole storyline of the Super Bowl is. Like, you got, like, the other main story is the fact that the San Francisco quarterback was the last pick of the draft. And in the NFL, that's a big deal because there's seven rounds, you know? So it's not two rounds like the NBA. So, like, that's an interesting story. Yeah. But other than that, it's nothing really interesting. So with the Super Bowl, you have to come up with headlines for 2 weeks leading up. So, you know, Taylor Swift is, you know, low-hanging fruit to be able to just kind of chat about that and hypothesize what's going to happen if they win, if they're going to be, like, some sort of proposal or something. The NFL in American sports is basically a soap opera. I think we all know that by now. So it's, you know, to be expected, I think, especially with so much downtime before the actual game kicks off.
Yeah. I'm just having a little bit of fun. So this was the NFL portion of the episode. I have no idea who's the best team. I know Patrick Mahomes. So yeah, probably he's good. And Taylor Swift, I like her. So yeah, probably he make her happy, whatever. I don't know if you have a expert opinion, Alex, on this.
I was going to ask Omar, like, I've said to you guys before, I actually got into the NFL before I got into basketball way back when I was younger, and did follow the Giants initially, which I think helped towards me becoming a Knicks fan, you know, just with a New York thing, affiliation, I guess. But I remember the 49ers were good when I started following the Giants. I was trying to remember the name of the quarterback and running back. They had two, like, Hall of Famer type guys. So this would be, like, maybe late 80s, something like that. Who am I thinking of again?
Probably quarterback was probably Joe Montana.
Joe Montana, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, and I think if it was a Hall of Fame, I don't know if they had a running back. Sorry,
a wide receiver. Sorry.
Yeah, Jerry Rice, who is probably the best who's ever played that position. Yeah.
Dan Marino came into my head, but I was like, no, he was the Dolphins, and I knew that. So I'm so glad you came on, Omar.
This is a random conversation I cannot be a part of. So
yeah.
So you guys, Alex, you alluded to how Brunson was disrespected at the draft. And, well, Jimmy Fallon was on this week. Was it Brunson was on a Jimmy Fallon show this week.
Yep.
And Jimmy Fallon brought the receipts with him. I don't know if you guys saw that during the interview. Yeah. So he brought up, Jimmy Fallon brought up three receipts from three different experts in basketball. One saying that the Knicks' pursuit of Brunson ends with overpriced contract. So Jalen Brunson is overpriced. The other one is, if anyone screams potential bust, it's Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, I like that
and
one.
The rest, we know this one. Sports Illustrated, don't be surprised if this ultimately backfires. This signing by the Knicks of Jalen Brunson is a C. So things changed.
Well, Omar was a big fan at the time. I remember he talked us off the ledge a little bit, you know, with it. So, yeah.
I'll be honest, guys. I didn't think it'd be this.
I don't think
nobody did. Like, I think honestly, I know we're going to talk about trades in a little bit. I think a lot of the reason why they've gone into this win now trade stuff is because how good he's become. I think they were looking at it as like, all right, here's a guy who's going to get us like 16-5. You know, be a steady hand at the point guard position. Instead, you got a superstar, you know, and I feel comfortable saying that now, considering just what he's done this year, what he did last year, and obviously the playoffs last year. And, you know, so you're seeing this as like, hey, we got probably the best value contract in the league right now when you consider money versus output. And let's try and, you know, the window is open. It's kind of this big opening, you know, let's go ahead and try and see if we could get through. That's why I think, you know, they kind of moved on from the young talent and said, let's win right now, because he's special. You know, he's a special talent. And even the biggest supporter of the move, because I had my doubts at first. I thought he might stay in Dallas because, you know, they had just gone to a conference finals and everything. But even the biggest supporter could not have foreseen this, because, you know, he's a small guard. He was a second round pick, and who had nice moments backing up Luka Doncic. You don't expect that guy to just take that sort of a leap, but he did. And I'm just obviously glad every day that he's the point guard of our team, right? You know, it's we kind of have to count our lucky stars. It's almost like it's good karma for us after years and years and years of struggling to find somebody where for the previous 20 years, your best guys at that position were, you know, a distracted Stephon Marbury and Raymond Felton, you know, and Jeremy Lin for 2 weeks. You know, like that was, yeah. And so that's what you had. And now we have a guy who's legitimate, you know, all-star in the conference. He's a legitimate top five player in his position. And, you know, it's just a wonderful thing to have to watch or to watch every night, you know, is just seeing this guy who's just so masterful and just it's impossible for so many teams to try and guard him. It's great that it's happening to us instead of us watching other teams do it to us, right? So that's the big deal.
I think as well as that, you've obviously got the talent that's come through, but I mean, he seems to be a guy that's universally kind of loved by everybody, including his teammates. Yeah. He's, you know, he puts 100% effort in every single game, which is just rubbing off on the rest of the team as well. It really could not have. There's no downside to this at all. Anybody trying to argue anything other than he's a ball hog. That's the other one, you know. Apart from that, you can't see anything negative about the guy at all.
What's funny about that, Alex? All the people say he's a ball hog would kill to have SGA on this team.
Yeah.
Who is probably like the highest usage player in the league this year, I think. Yeah. And if not, he's top five. And so the NBA now is just filled with these heliocentric offense guys who have the ball in their hands forever. You know, Harden was like that for years. Doncic is like that now. Mm. SGA is like that. You know, all these guys who have the ball in their hands, they're going to have it for a long time. So you could say ball hog or whatever. Every team is not the Warriors with the ball movement, right?
The game's changed, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I think people look back to teams like the Spurs and things, which is just constant movement. You know, they look back to point guards, I don't know, like Chris Paul in his prime, you know, these kind of players and this kind of systems just don't really exist anymore. It's just, I agree with you. I think it would have been easy to stay on the Mavs and you know, live in the shadow of Luka and not have to deal with the kind of pressure of taking on. And I think, you know, we've talked many times about Randall, about how he's, you know, not afraid of taking on the pressure of New York and all that comes with that. And, you know, Brunson's another one, you know, it's just these are the kind of guys that are going to take New York to wherever it wants to get to. It's the only way, you know, having to deal with that spotlight of playing in New York. So.
You can look at when we signed Jalen Brunson, we always the talk was he's going to go come to New York and help be the number two to Julius Randle. And he played, and this is no disrespect to Julius Randle because he's playing still tremendously, but Jalen Brunson got even better, he surpassed that. Yeah. And so you can say that Brunson maybe became a number one in some 1A, situations, maybe. Probably one A closing the game. And if he with the ball in his hands, you want it in Brunson's in hands. Mm-hmm. But you have and Randall learned to play off that perfectly. And all that talk about the ball hog Randall is and everything, the ISO plays well. It's an ISO league now. We discussed this many times, but they play off each other very, very well. And so you alluded, Omar, to the win now. It's a win now-ish. Yeah. Because there's a window, of course. The contracts, both him, Jalen Brunson, and Julius Randle will want more money.
Of course.
Because they are in so cheap contracts for what they give to a team. It's one is the multiple time All-Star. The other is a newly All-Star and probably be talked about if he continues playing like this, probably talked to as an MVP. Not, he probably won't win it, but will be in the conversation about it. So more, they will want more money. So the team will have to be constructed differently if they stay, obviously. So speaking of team constructions, and you said the kids had to go basically to find better pieces to suit the well, the lane they picked. As I mentioned a few episodes ago, after the RJ and Quickly trade, they picked the lane and they need to build around that lane to players to better suit the what we have with the Brunson and Randall, the top two, clearly the top two. Mm-hmm. We were always discussing what Quickly could be, what RJ is, if it's a two or a three in this situation. It's no longer a debate. So we did a few trades, as we all know. We got OG Anunoby, who's been a great asset, and trade deadline came and everybody was expecting moves. And maybe there was some concern if the moves were coming or not, because we didn't know the situation on OG Anunoby's injury, on Randall's injury, even Mitch's injury is kind of weird. But this is my opinion. Making a move now, but getting rid of, not rid of, but trading away Evan Fournier and Quentin Grimes. Obviously, Malachi Flynn was here. He drank his cup of coffee and left.
Yeah.
Archie Diacono went on his streak without scoring a point to continue it somewhere else. And yeah, we got two players who were heavily discussed on with the Knicks. It was Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanović for the Detroit Pistons, obviously. So, guys, Omar, let's start with you. What did you think about this trade? If you were expecting something like this, what does this tell you through the rest of the season and even probably the coming going into the playoffs?
Yeah, so starting with the OG trade, obviously, you know, you guys broke that down weeks ago when that happened. I was a little skeptical about acquiring him in the past just because, you know, he seemed like he wanted a bigger role and all this stuff. But in acquiring him, he has been just a hand-in-glove fit defensively for what they want to do. And, you know, the corner three percentage particular, the Knicks love to set that up, and I think that's why they got Bogdanović and Burks as well, is they are both also excellent from both corner and above the break threes. But so I think when they got rid of Barrett and Quickly, they obviously had I thought OG was a sorry Rafa if this offends you a little bit, but OG was an immediate upgrade over what RJ gave you in that position. And I've always contended that RJ was playing out of position by playing at the three. He's more of a two guard. But
I agree.
Yeah. So, but losing Quickly and his production off the bench, you can't replace with Deuce McBride. Respectfully, I like Deuce, but you know, he's not Emmanuel Quickly from an offensive scoring and initiating perspective, right? So you had to bring in some guys that could do that. And, you know, we've seen what Alec Burks can do when he was on the team. And obviously he's comfortable in Thibodeau's system. There's a rapport there. He's played with Randall. You know, there's a lot there, and bringing him in makes a lot of sense. He's a guy who can initiate the offense for you when Brunson's off the court. And Bogdanović is just a shooter, a guy with playoff experience. And I think bringing those two guys in, and when the rest of the team gets healthy, because right now you can't really judge it because everybody's hurt. You know, you're missing most of your starting lineup, and, you know, you're relying on a lot of Precious Achiuwa minutes, who was, of course, a part of the OG Anunoby trade as well. And, you know, it's I think the team has a chance to make some noise in the playoffs because they have clearly identified, like, hey, this is Jalen and Julius's team. We are going to live and die with these two guys, and we think they could take us places. Well, when you got two ISO-heavy guys who like to operate in the paint most of the time, you're going to want shooters around them. And Anunoby, Bogdanović, even Precious Achiuwa to a slight extent, Alec Burks, all can extend things with range. And I think that poses a really interesting development. And you look at the East right now, Boston seems to have kind of separated from everybody else, you know, in terms of, you know, they have a really easy schedule remaining. I would imagine they're going to be locked into the one seed, presumably, unless some injury happens. And Philly is in a downward spiral after the Embiid injury. Milwaukee is as shaky as I've ever seen them, and I don't know how much anyone wants to trust Doc Rivers in a playoff coaching situation anymore, right? And Cleveland's been hot, but they haven't really shown it in the playoffs, you know? So the window is there, right? You know, the window is there to make the conference finals at the very least. If you and You know, Miami hasn't looked particularly great, but you never know, you know, with Jimmy and Spo once the playoffs come around. Indiana looks like they're a fun story, but maybe not quite ready yet. You're going to need a little bit more development of Halliburton and the rest of the guys there. The window is now. Like, the window is this year and next year before those contracts have to get renewed, to your point earlier, Rafa. And I think they're in a good position. I'm not saying they're going to make the NBA Finals. I think there's a very strong chance they could be in the conference finals, though, and meet Boston there, you know, depending on how the seeding lines up.
Just to pick up on a wee point about Bogdanović and Burks, I think you're right. I mean, obviously that was one of the main downsides against the Heat in the playoffs last year, was the, you know, the lack of reliable shooting. And so both those guys coming in are very high percentage around the league. So reliable, as you said, the experienced playoff players. So they couldn't have fit more perfectly. And I think the number one thing that I've not seen too much about is these aren't guys that are going to be screaming for, you know, wanting bigger roles and stuff like that. I think, you know, the obvious, obviously in the last, you know, once the OG trade went through, was there was a massive hole in kind of bench production and things like that. And these guys are just going to seamlessly fit into bench roles. And you know, some of the comments that Bogdanović is already coming out with, you can tell he's not going to be have his nose put out by not starting and things like that. You know, he's just there to happily, you know, and this is a 20-point a game player with a high percentage, certainly from three, and you know, he seems to be happy in his bench role. So couldn't have been more two perfect signings, I think.
Let's be honest, two guys,
especially for what we gave up.
Let's be honest, both of these guys are probably just thanking their lucky stars that they're out of the situation with the Pistons, right? Well, worst exactly, team in the league, and you go to a top four team in the East. Yeah. You know, who wouldn't sign up for that? Whatever you need from me, I got this. You know, that's I think that's kind of the thing. And of course, exactly. The other aspect is the tradability of Bogdanović's contract. Yep. You know, was just, again, a great maneuvering of the cap by Leon Rose and everybody. So, you know, I do want to say one thing about Fournier before we move on. You know, it could have been really easy for him to shit on the fans and shit on the team. And just considering, you know, he's in his late 20s, he's still in his prime, and he basically lost the last 2 years of his career. And I think that he handled it incredibly professionally, you know, and he had his little thank you tweet to the fans in New York. And he could have easily, I wouldn't have begrudged him for not saying anything, you know, just considering how he was benched. You know, you set the franchise record and made threes, and we understand the defense has never been there, but you know, it's, you know, but he was just on the bench, never said anything. When he comes in for the first time in 20 games, he just comes in and plays. And you know, I respect him a lot for all that, the way he handled the situation. Just a definition of professionalism, I think.
Sure. No, I agree, but I think age does come into it a little bit. I think if he was maybe, you know, 33, 34 or something like that, and you're in the end, then he might have been a bit looser with his words, but, you know, he's still got a good few years in the league, and, you know, you don't want to burn your bridges with the...
Sure.
Certainly guys like Leon Rose, who are, you know, well connected around the league and stuff. So, I don't know. Maybe age played a little bit of a part in that, because he did have a few wee snipes in the media during his benching time. But
it could have been a lot worse, man. I'm just saying, it could have been a lot worse. You know, but it definitely could have been a situation where he's kind of thinking about the future. But I still think I got respect for him for the way he went about it, regardless. And, you know, hopefully, sure. I'm assuming he might get bought out by the Pistons.
I think it's
a possibility. A possibility. It's out there that he will be bought out by the Pistons. I don't know if he finds another place after literally 2 years of not playing. Maybe someone pick him up at a minimum, but
Lakers will get him on a minimum or something like that, no doubt.
I mean, well, if he goes there only to shoot threes, it's what they want. They don't play defense. Other guys play defense, and so it could be a good fit for him. But you guys alluded to the bench and how it became a problem, the bench unit, after both Quickly and RJ left, because they were carrying that second unit, who won us a lot of games this year, especially in the beginning of the season, while Brunson struggled and Randall was still getting his act together after the surgery. So yeah, I always said that this was if they don't address it, it would be an issue. It kind of was. The bench was an issue, but well, Jalen Brunson is a hell of a basketball player, and so we won a couple of games in a row again. So yeah, Burks is back. We know what Burks is. He can play point guard if needed. God forbid. Not in a starting role. Yeah, I know. Right. Starting role in benches unit. It's different. I know. But Bogdanović is... we didn't have any shooters. And now we have a couple. We have a couple of shooters and guys who can be a threat and the pick and shoot and a spot up shooter. It's be there, pick and pop. They can do it. Bogdanović can do it. Burks, we know, can do it. Anunoby can do it as well. And it is a thing that we know that neither RJ or Quickly were good as a catch and shoot guy, especially RJ, as we know, of his struggles. And this is what the team needed. And I'm very, very sad to see Quentin Grimes go in this trade.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he was put to the test last year and this year. He needed to pick up his game, to show that he was the guy we could have relied on the offense and on the defensive end. And ultimately, I think we needed more on the offensive end from Quentin Grimes. And again, the Brunson playing as a superstar we needed to take a jump faster than we don't have the time to develop all the players we need to develop, because Brunson and Randall are here now, so we need to play for now. Obviously, I was a bit on the play the kids, and Burks was one of the guys who was ahead of the kids, and now he's back because the kids are gone, which is ironic. But yeah, everybody's talking about the Knicks as a contender now. We're in the mix because of these trades, because of how the guys are playing. And it's amazing how we have all these injuries. We're the New York injury Knicks right now. Everybody's
Westchester
going down.
Westchester Knicks, yeah. We're the Westchester Knicks right now.
Man, and we're still winning games, which is amazing, and still being really competent. And we have no players, but teams are still mocking us after beating us. So, yeah, you played against Taj Gibson, 20-minute Taj Gibson, who, poor guy, he's done. As Alex says many times, just give him the coaching job. Please give him the coaching job. Yeah. It's he does what he can. But Artenstein got injured again. He's not 100%, got injured again. OG, surgery. Everybody's dropping. But we're so far ahead that we are struggling like this, and we're still, there's no one saying, the Knicks might miss the playoffs with these injuries. No, we're good. We're golden. We can make the playoffs, and, we can be a threat in these playoffs, especially with like you said, Omar, the inconsistent Bucks and the Sixers, who are gonna probably drop, because I don't see Tobias Harris carrying this team anywhere.
Rafa, sorry, you mentioned again, obviously, about the 3-point shooting with the new guys coming in, but I think another important point is that Randall doesn't have to shoot these shots now.
Or Josh Hart,
yeah.
For that matter,
You know, we all know where Randall's at.
He doesn't shoot.
There was a really interesting graphic somebody put up earlier, and it was comparing, you know, Randall's shot chart from like now compared with, you know, a couple of years ago, and it was vastly different. You know, and he's eliminated all these kind of long twos, difficult twos, which was it 3 years ago now that, you know, those difficult shots were going in, and yeah, it was great at the time, but you know, it wasn't sustainable. And since Brunson's come in, you know, he could have pouted, he could have, you know, got upset about the fact that he's no longer the face of the franchise, you know, and but the two of them are getting on so well. You can see the camaraderie in the court, and Brunson's just taking that load off him. And I think with Burks and Bogdanovic and all this extra shooting from outside, I think Randall can just become the best version of himself, you know, which is, a secondary facilitator. You know, he can take some of the defense away from Brunson, creating space for Brunson. He can attack the basket. He's a fantastic finisher at the rim, you know. And I think, you know, again, it's been said many times in the last few days, once this team's healthy, you know, I think we all just can't wait to see that. So,
yeah, this team, there's a we're winning so many games, and we have an injured Mitchell Robinson. He's not even in the equation, but because Hartenstein has been playing out of his mind. It's the backup centers. I don't know what's in the water in New York there.
Omar, who do you think will start at center when everyone's healthy?
I feel like it should be Hartenstein, just because he gives you so much more from a passing perspective. And I think you probably want to ease Mitch back in. That being said, I feel like there's like a loyalties thing there, and they'll probably try to insert Mitch maybe into the starting lineup, but reduce his minutes and close with Hartenstein. So that's kind of my prediction. But Hartenstein has kind of been playing well enough to warrant, you know, a pretty substantial contract extension this offseason. So yeah. I am curious if, you know, moving on from Grimes was, you know, part of that was being able to kind of be able to give him a little bit more money in the offseason when that time comes. But yeah, I think that the minutes will skew more towards Hartenstein when Mitch comes back, regardless of who's starting. That's kind of my takeaway from that.
I mean, he's got a nagging, obviously, Achilles injury, which is always a massive worry.
So. Yeah.
So, I mean, he needs to be managed as well when he comes back. So, I think it's more my take on it is that I think, you know, they would have Mitch starting and possibly Hartenstein finishing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's funny. I always think that, OG and Mitch will give a defensive presence to this team that you were discussing about him starting or not. And I was thinking, do you guys think that we can. Like normally, you try and divide the offensive players while they're resting. Do you think it's a possibility that we divide our defensive anchors to be always have always a defensive presence? Like we play Mitch and OG together, but we try to rest one while the other is on the court because Mitch was such a present defensively. And I think we jumpstart this trade for OG Anunoby because Mitch went down and we needed that defense because the team, after Mitch got injured, our defense was all over the place. Do you think there's a possibility we divide and conquer the defensive end, or the rotations, we change them like that and maybe have Mitch come off the play with the bench mob more or come off the I understand that coming off the bench, maybe is Mitch is not Evan Fournier. Let's put it like this. Mitch would not take it lightly. He's a guy who tweets about cardio. So I don't think he coming off the bench again, he would be very happy. But I think it's a possibility of spreading the defensive wealth around.
I think so. When you consider, you know, Bogdanovic is not well known for his defense, right? So you're going to want some sort of security when he's on the floor. And I think by having Mitch in those moments, you at least have decent or really good rim protection and good gravity for people driving in to kind of mitigate the deficiencies of Bogdanovic defensively. Burks plays the defense well enough, like he has enough intensity to stay with guys like even like guarding Halliburton in the last game, the defense was good. Halliburton was just better, you know, in a lot of shots that he kind of put up there. But yeah, I think it's a good point, you know, being able to kind of, you know, I think the thing about Tibbs that everybody said for so long was, oh, he always needs rim protection on the floor, right? That's always like kind of the go-to line that everybody says. But maybe I feel like, to his credit, especially this year, he's adapted a lot more. You know, he is really, you know, he has this reputation of being rigid and running players into the ground and doing all this, that, and the third. I think he's been a lot more flexible this year, more so than maybe we give him credit for. You know, I'm not saying he's the most flexible coach of the world, but, you know, considering what we think of him. But so I think he might look at it as an opportunity to say, okay, I want the best possible defender on the floor at all times, as opposed to rip protection. And OG's so versatile. He guard every position, you know, so it gives him a lot more to kind of mess with as a kind of defensive mad scientist that he is, right? So I think that that's a very likely possibility. And Mitch, to his credit, is also a versatile defender, you know, not a 1-5 situation, but he's gone on the perimeter and held his own against, you know, some wing players from time to time. So, yeah, I think you might be onto something with that one, Rafa.
Yeah. I assume Alex would jump on this situation as well, being the defensive, lover that he is. Not saying defensive wet dreams again.
You're about to say Alex loves the D, weren't you?
It's your words, not mine. Yeah, so we were discussing before we jumped on here that the trade deadline was a little deadish, giving that notion that the trade deadline is kind of dead. There were a few moves here and there, but nothing amazing, nothing large. Maybe the larger move to coming up to the trade deadline was actually the Knicks trading for OG Anunoby. Other than that, it was quite... It was the Pistons dumping players all over the place. The Sixers doing a couple of moves. The Mavs actually picking up some guys as well. PJ Washington, for example. Omar, what did you think about this trade deadline movement? Excited to watch Woj drop the Woj bomb of the Kevin Knox trade. Hey, loved it.
I was particularly excited to see that my man Shake Milton was on the move pretty early on there on deadline day. But ultimately, I think there's two factors why it's kind of a dud. One is you got the in-season tournament this year. And I think with that, teams were trying for a longer period, you know? And so... there wasn't like, well, we're full on tanking now or whatever. There was only a few teams that could really be considered full on tanking. And also the new CBA has made it so much harder to kind of make these deals. And with the way like the cap is going to be restructured and all this stuff, I think we're in a little bit of a transition period with the big trade. Like everybody was hoping for a DeJounte Murray deal, for example. And, you know, it never came, probably because the Hawks wanted a lot and not everybody was willing to give a lot. And the trade market itself is just so out of whack right now, I think, because, you know, a couple summers ago, you know, you had big moves with like Gobert and then Donovan Mitchell. And then, you know, now it's kind of like, well, this new CBA is happening and I don't know if we could kind of do this or maneuver that way. So you saw a lot of teams just kind of operating on the margins, you know, just like Boston's a really good example. Like at the beginning of the year, I said, oh, this looks like the best team in the East. I would expect them to add some depth at the deadline. And that's exactly what they did by getting Jaden Springer and by getting Xavier Tillman from Memphis. So, and then you got these teams like Oklahoma City that just have a million second round picks. And, you know, knowing you're not going to make those picks, so you got to cash them in somehow. So it's kind of a weird situation overall, I think. And I think a lot of people expected it to be a little underwhelming. I did think DeJounte would get moved, though, so that one kind of surprised me. But more or less, it's just kind of like just speaks to the changing landscape a little bit of the NBA. And, you know, we're kind of going to moving into this new bargaining agreement and kind of agents and front offices kind of have to navigate it a little bit to figure out how to manipulate it like they did the current CBA in the past.
Just on the DeJounte Murray, sorry, quickly, was the you're right that I think they panicked a little bit because I think they gave up, was it three unprotected picks to get Murray, and he's not particularly declined as a player. I mean, he's
bad fit. You know,
he's on a good contract. He's just a bad fit. Yeah, and they're, you know, clearly saying, you know, if we're going to give him up, we want to get something back. You know, maybe not the three unprotected picks, but they need to get more than, you know, the one protected first or whatever that the Lakers were giving up, or I think the Knicks even suggested, there was a suggestion that, you know, we weren't willing to go more than one pick either. So, you know, I think from a asset management side of things, I think the Hawks were just like, we can't let that guy go for so little compared to what we got him for. So, but yeah, I think you're right. I think it's as much the kind of market that's changed that's caused that, rather than the player himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was glad the Knicks didn't get Murray. You know, I am not the biggest Murray fan. Especially,
yeah, I'm with you, Rafa. I was out on them getting Murray. You know, I just felt like we'd be replicating a similar situation with a ball dominant guard next to him in Atlanta. You know, and Alex, I know you're a little bit more keen on his defensive upside, obviously, which he does have. The wingspan is crazy, you know, but I do think like he needs to have the ball in his hands to be effective. That's when he was most effective in San Antonio. I think he needs to go to a team that needs him as a lead guard, and the Knicks obviously don't need a lead guard, you know, and would it have been an interesting defensive fit? And could you have seen, was like, imagine going up against, well, you know, him and, you know, Mitch when he's back, and Anunoby when he's back. I mean, that would have been a nightmare in the playoffs. But, you know, offensively, you do wonder about how that would have worked. You know, would have been a little bit of your turn, my turn type thing. And obviously the Lakers offer was a joke, like the Lakers offer is most deadlines, right? Because they're always in a state of mortgaging the future, and so they have very little to play with. And, you know, one thing that I thought was interesting, getting away from DeJounte for a second, was the Dallas deal for PJ Washington. I don't know if you guys saw the pick that was attached to that one, where they gave up a top two protected pick in, I think it's 2030, I think, or 2027, excuse me. But like a top two protection is almost guaranteed to be a really good pick. It's probably going to convey, you know, one, you know, regardless. So even if, but that's like 3 years out, who knows what the Mavs look like then? Yeah, that could turn into be a really good pick depending on what that draft class looks like. And, you know, I don't think it'd be outside the realm of possibility that year that Charlotte has two top 10 picks, you know, with, in addition to their own. So I thought that was a little interesting. I think the Mavs are kind of trying to placate Luka a lot and say, hey, look, we got Kyrie in here. We bring you a couple rim running guys of Washington and Gafford who can, you know, so please stay with us, you know, kind of deal. And it's kind of an interesting kind of observing the Luka clock right now and how that kind of pans out in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, if you give everything from 2027, 2028 to win this year or the next year, will you care? Because it's a different thing. You have the NBA, like the Raptors, they won a title, and they can do, to the fans, they can do absolutely no wrong because they won a title. So they have, for the next few years, they'll have, okay, it's good. You won it, so we're good. You can rebuild. It's okay. We will allow it. And after winning a title, you have that. If the Mavs win the title, who cares if they'll suck for 2 or 3 years? Even if Luka leaving obviously would sting, but they won a title with Luka, and Luka's gone somewhere else. And and again, and Kyrie Irving is there, but he is not as young as he once was. Mm-hmm. And so his window as a top tier player is slowly going down as well. And they need help, and they got help for Luka and Irving, which is interesting to the Western Conference. So you talked about the Lakers, and there was a funny report around, a rumor going around that we could have had, or we could have in the future, a guy who plays for the Lakers now. I don't know if you heard of him, about the name of LeBron James, coming to the Knicks. Mm-hmm. I don't know what. Let's humor this because it's. I don't think he would ever be coming here, to the Knicks. Would you give up anything for him, or it would be just a free agent thing? And would you trade everyone to mortgage the rest of the future because LeBron James has to win today?
I think if this was LeBron at 35 years old, you do it, right? Especially right now, the construction of the team is very LeBron-friendly. You know, you got a lot of veterans, a lot of shooting, decent amount of defense. You know, it's a team that, you know, would probably fit hand in glove with LeBron, you know, if you kind of swapped out like a Julius Randle or something, right? And I just look at it as like, we've never seen this before. The guy's 39. Right? Like 38, 39. And we don't know when it's going to fall off the cliff. You know, it's just like defensively, it's already fallen off the cliff. We know that. But as an offensive player, he still has it, you know, which is crazy. You know, we've never seen it before. Like Kareem, when he was this old, was averaging like 10 points a game. You know, like it's just such a shift from what we've been used to. So you can't mortgage too much of the future. Because you don't know how many years he has left, right? So if I'm the Knicks, I'm just like, I'm out on acquiring LeBron. Because also, it comes the LeBron circus, right? You know, New York's bad enough. You know, you get LeBron James in there, and then you got the speculation of, all right, well, is Bronny going to go undrafted, and are the Knicks going to pick him up, and are we going to have to give him rotation minutes to appease LeBron? And it becomes like this whole shit show, right, that the Knicks don't want to deal with. Like, look at this current regime. They are drama free. You know, like for you guys who talk about the team every week, it's like what you talk about sometimes, because there's nothing, no spicy story to report, which is not what the Knicks fans and anybody who covers the team is used to, because they're used to like the Phil Jackson era and Isaiah Thomas era and, you know, all this shit that would be going on. Like, this team has no drama. There's so much chemistry. And it's just like, it feels like they want a certain type of player. And right now, LeBron James isn't that player. And, you know, I remember when he made the decision, you know, I had hopes of him signing with the Knicks and, you know, formulating some sort of super team or something. And, you know, it didn't happen. Obviously, he went to Miami, won titles, then, you know, went on to back to Cleveland. But, you know, I just don't see the point. Like, then you had the other day where you, like, put the towel on at MSG and, you know, Brian Windhorst goes like, oh, he was sending a message to the Lakers front office. Like, I don't want that on my team right now. You know, like, that's just – it's just not worth it, you know. And you can make the argument that right now the Lakers are kind of a mediocre team, and they have a guy in Anthony Davis who is, you know, a really good player in this league, and they're not really able to figure it out. So who's to say he'd be able to figure it out with Jalen Brunson and OG Anunoby, right? You know, it's just kind of like, you know, it's I think the boat has passed on the Knicks acquiring LeBron, and it's a fun thought exercise. It's something that people like to talk about because LeBron's always an interesting topic of conversation. But, yeah, I think the window is passed. Like, if this was before he went to L.A., LeBron, yeah, sure. You know, entertain it. He's still at the peak of his powers. But now – he's still kind of at the peak of his powers, but you don't know how much longer he has. And that would feel like a very old Knicks move, you know, as opposed to this current regime, which seems a lot more pragmatic and smart with its approach.
I think he'd probably want it more than the Knicks want it to happen, to be honest. I think LeBron's obviously the last few years is all about legacy and, you know, where he's going to be seen when he finally gives it up. And, you know, that's a lot of why he's in LA in the first place, you know, just to cement himself with all the legends there. And I think New York is probably something that he's going to retire and think, you know, he kind of wished he'd done something there, you know. So I think that's all that nonsense last week with the towel and stuff, I think that is all it is. You know, he's done this before, front offices, where he's just put a little bit of pressure on just to say, you know, the player power is a thing these days. And, you know, we saw Giannis doing it with Lillard, you know, the kind of threats to leave and the threats to do this, that. And, you know, these guys do have power, and you know, the front office will listen to LeBron. He's a kind of GM without the kind of name tag. So, I think that's all it is. I don't think there's any chance of it happening. I think if it does happen, I think it'll be a shame, because I think we'd need to, you know, in a year or two time when he does retire, you'd need to start this whole process off again. And we've come so far. We've done so much good work. The roster's in such a good place. Front office is in such a good place. And I just think, yeah, it would just reset the whole thing again. And we've absolutely no guarantee. I mean, look at last year, for instance. You know, LeBron gets you so far, but he's not winning you, guaranteed you to get to the finals anymore. So, you know, there's no guarantees that you would actually bring a title to New York. So it's not worth the risk. And yeah, I just think it would be a shame just for it to happen, just to see where this current roster is going to take us. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I agree with you guys 100%. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I was just going to say I do have my doubts as to, you know, the long-term future of Randall, though. Like you mentioned, you know, would you swap LeBron out for Randall? But I'm not convinced they're going to let Randall stay up until the next extension. You know, obviously Brunson's a given. But, I think they're already starting to think, you know, whether they can move on from Randall. I think, you know, as it currently stands, he's playing great. He's fitting in great. I'm just not convinced they'd be willing to extend him in some kind of max deal.
I agree, Alex. The only way that happens, I think, is if he has a great showing in the playoffs this year, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like if he, like, because that's, let's be thing, honest, yeah. You know, if he has been a dud in the playoffs for the Knicks and the two times that they've made it while he's been here. And, you know, the first time, you know, was you could write it off saying, you know, they're overmatched. They hit a lot of lucky, he hit a lot of lucky long twos throughout that year. And then, but then last year, obviously you say he was injured and all this, blah, blah. But, you know, if it's another dud this year, then the team says, oh, it kind of becomes like a Toronto DeRozan situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, we like DeMar, but he has a very limited ceiling as a playoff performer. And, you know, Tatum, Giannis are still going to be there, you know, in the East. Embiid, you know, pending health, obviously. You know, these are guys you got to get past. And if you don't have the best version of Julius Randle in the playoffs, you know, you start moving on from him, or talk about moving on from him, which is completely fair for a team that has championship aspirations.
Yeah, last year I don't count as a Randle bad playoff run because of his injury, and knew he needed surgery. Now he needed injury. He needed surgery, and he struggled to begin the season after the surgery. After he was healthy, so there was obviously something there to hurt him. So I agree with in the sense of the playoffs are right now his weakness. He needs to show up in the playoffs, and even if we lose in the second round or whatever, he needs to be good in those games. And as a matter of fact, I think he was better last year injured than in the first year we went to the playoffs. He wasn't there shooting, but he was helping the team in other ways.
I feel like the process was good. Like I remember you guys talking about it and me talking to you guys about it. I felt like his shot selection was fine. The decision making was good. It just, the shots weren't falling, you know, and that's the NBA, right? You know, sometimes you make them, sometimes you miss them. And, you know, unfortunately he was missing them, you know. He has just a chance to recoup. Yeah, of course. Yeah. He wants it real badly. Same way Jalen wants it so badly. They came to New York wanting to build something, and they've built something, right? And they want to succeed here more than any of us even knows, right? So, you know, hopefully he gets, recovered from this shoulder injury, and he could be back for the stretch run. That's why I think none of us are really worried about all these injuries right now, you know, where it's in some ways could be considered a blessing in disguise. You know, you get a little bit of this rest time, especially with the All-Star break coming up, and then you kind of start gearing up for the stretch run and getting into the playoffs.
It's, especially the Obi. Sorry, Obi. I keep calling him Obi. OG. You know, that's the sort of one that you don't want. There was talk about him getting injections and things just to kind of get him through the pain and stuff. And you're like, you don't want that flaring up just before the playoffs, or even worse in the playoffs. So get it tidied up now. And it seems to have been a successful operation. He's still going to have plenty of time to ramp it up before the playoffs.
Exactly.
So speaking of the, again, of the playoffs and with this roster and everything else, so there's still some guys in a buyout market, as we people like to call it. Obviously, a few of them already left quickly. Kyle Lowry went to the 76ers, went back home. Thankfully, Spencer Dinwiddie went to the Lakers. This is the move the Lakers did to help LeBron. They got Dinwiddie.
He saw the name of the arena and just couldn't go anywhere else. You know, Mr. Crypto.
Marcus Morris is talked about going to the Spurs. Finally, going to the Spurs. But other than that, I don't. Especially after these trades we made, Bogdanovich and Burks. I don't know, guys. What available right now? Joe Harris, Killian Hayes, Robin Lopez, Victor Oladipo, Gallinari, Korkmaz, James Bouknight, Corey Joseph. And there's two possibilities now going into the buyout markets, which are Evan Fournier and David Bertans. Do any of these names scream at you, Knicks need to jump on that to make it better? I know one name that would replace Taj Gibson's minutes, which is Robin Lopez. I don't know. I mean, Robin Lopez is what he is, but he is better than Taj Gibson at 55. I don't know. He appears 55. But any of these names jump at you?
I'm gonna throw a name that you didn't mention, Rafa. It's a guy in the Wizards. DeLon Wright, I think, is a guy, another 3-point shooter, that you could surround and get his insurance policy, for the stretch run here. I wouldn't be opposed to Lopez, to be honest. Obviously, he had a little bit of a tenure here before, but considering the way that our centers have been dropping like flies, maybe not the worst thing in the world to take a flyer on one of these centers in the buyout market. Bismack Biyombo got picked up by OKC, and so I think he's somebody good. I mean, you got Thaddeus Young potentially out there as well. It's a
He's more of a power forward.
Yeah, he's more of a power forward, but at this point, you're kind of just hoping for the best when it comes to getting these big men, right? So,
Would you rather have Thaddeus Young at 5 or Taj Gibson, Alex?
100%.
Thaddeus Young.
I'd rather have this guy at the 5. And I thought when you said Wizards, Omar, you were going down the Ish Smith
route. Ish Smith rabbit hole, yeah. I mean, that'd be great for Clyde. That'd be a nice present for him. Yeah.
Our friend from UK Bucks had mentioned about Robin Lopez is saying that he's completely washed. He just doesn't have it anymore. And I think, we're all thinking back to the time he was on the Knicks before, where he was a really solid player. So, I think we can find better out there, to be honest. I think we're just thinking back of nice memories of when he was on the Knicks before. But I don't think he's got anything left.
Where is Nerlens Noel? Does he want to come back to the Knicks? Is Dwight Howard still a fan? I don't know, man. I love me some Taj Gibson, but he is. We were talking about LeBron James. It's only 1 year, but Taj Gibson is younger than LeBron James.
Yeah,
and one is completely done. Poor Taj, and LeBron is LeBron. Well, Omar, right before we finish up the episode, do you wanna tell us what's going on in your life right now? You moved, if someone doesn't know, Omar did a slight move just across the country, different time zone and all.
Yeah.
So how's life? How have you been doing right now, watching the Knicks in a different time in the afternoon, right? Watching afternoon basketball.
Watching a Knicks game start at 4:30 local time is PM is fascinating. You know, it's weird because it's like the light's still out and the Knicks are tipping off and you feel like it's like a weird Sunday matinee game, but no, this is just basically every game. And when they have the matinee game, it's like at 9 a.m. my time, which is...
I was going to ask that. The matinee, what do you do with a matinee game? Well, sleepy with a coffee in the hands?
Look, like Christmas Day, right? They played 12 o'clock Eastern, which was 9 a.m. my time over here in Seattle. And it was just kind of like, you know, it was just weird, you know, because I'm used to... So, like, I was always used to, like, I do the family thing in the morning, get back and done to around noon to watch the Knicks game or whatever, because they usually have the early game. And this year it was a lot different. You know, it was earlier in the morning. So, but no, everything here has been good. Like I said, watching, you know, being in the city without an NBA team is a little weird. You know, obviously the closest is Portland with the Trailblazers. And the funny thing about it is Portland is 3 hours away, yet we still have Blazers games blacked out here. So I haven't been able to watch the DeAndre Ayton experience at all this year, which is a little upsetting. But overall pretty good. Just obviously doing a lot of writing right now. That's kind of been my big focus, and drinking a lot of coffee, as one does if you are here in the Pacific Northwest, kind of like coffee capital of America. So, you know, it's been pretty good. I can't complain, you know, and like I said, watching the Knicks from here. The thing that sucked, though, is I've been trying to get back into watching proper football. Obviously, we talked about the NFL before, but trying to get back into, like, the Premier League and stuff like that. And it's kind of impossible. I kind of feel like you guys in a little bit because games here, they start at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, because it's normally 7 a.m. Eastern time, you know, which was already a stretch when I was living in Eastern time. Now it's like 4 o'clock, and I was like, there's no way. You know, so, you know, I'll occasionally have a couple of teams kind of on the tape and kind of watch that. But yeah, so I kind of empathize with you guys a little bit there. It's just kind of flipped. You know, you guys have it like super late at night, whereas here it's super early in the morning. But, you know, a similar type vibe. I don't know if I could do what you do, Rafa, and set the alarm and be up at 4 a.m. to watch, you know, Arsenal West Ham match or something like that.
Well, I do not set the alarm. I actually prefer to stay awake, but
crazy.
Well, I'm the youngest here, but as age moves on, I'm thinking no. West Coast games are no way.
Yeah, that's what like was that like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning start for you guys?
Yeah,
10 p.m.
Yeah,
okay.
I remember what there was a game starting at 3:30 or something, and I had to get up super early that day. Yeah, playing at so I went to bed. I needed to get up at 7 a.m. or something. I wake up, watch the let's check the results. There's 2 minutes remaining. What?
Yeah,
and I watched the 2 minutes, the final 2 minutes of probably a loss. I don't know. But yeah, man, you're talking about your writing, Omar. Where can we find it? I find it on my Gmail box because I get I'm subscribed and I get But you where can little, non-subscribers?
Well, yeah, so you can check it out at deepcover.substack.com, and you subscribe for free. Get two articles every week, typically on the weekends. Sure, Rafa was pleased to get an article about Taylor Swift in his inbox yesterday, but you know, he probably said, "Oh, what is this spam?" You know, like, but
when does that thing come on?
But yeah, it's general sports stuff. I kind of, to be honest, I find it hard sometimes, especially when writing, to write about the Knicks and the Giants, for that matter. You know, teams that I have such an emotional attachment to. You know, and so it's a lot about NBA, a lot of NFL, a lot of college American football, if you guys are into that as well. So, yeah, check it out, deepcover.substack.com. Like I said, it's free, ad-free, and it gets delivered to your inbox twice a week.
It's very nice. You're talking about all the different sports. Let me throw another sport at you. So you were you moved to Seattle, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and you were trying to be an NHL Canucks fan.
Yeah.
Have you moved to the Kraken now? Are you a Kraken fan now? Are you going to the Kraken games or no?
I haven't gone to a Kraken game yet, but yeah, it's tough. It's like, I don't know if you ever experienced this either, guys. Like, when you try to take on so many sports, it becomes difficult. You know, so like, So I watch like NBA like basically every day, you know, on League Pass, and then obviously just NFL. And when college football was going on, that as well, it's like that I just couldn't even find space for the NHL really. And I know the Canucks are having a pretty interesting season. I think they're doing pretty well in the standings. And I always say like, oh, this is the year I'm going to dive into the NHL, and it never happens for whatever reason. So, but I think I'm going to have to adopt the Kraken more than likely because, you know, with the Canucks, you know, Vancouver's only an hour and a half away from here. So, you know, they're kind of close by, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, haven't really dove into it. Really should be. But for me, the priority is always going to be NBA. And that's really what's occupied a lot of my time.
Is there a decent soccer team in Seattle?
Yeah, so you got Seattle Sounders, who've been kind of have a pretty intense rivalry with Portland Timbers FC and the MLS. So look forward to that. Obviously, on the WNBA side, the Storm just signed a couple of big name free agents, kind of forming a third super team in that league. So I'm looking forward to that as well. You know, just kind of fixating my live basketball need, you know, when WNBA comes back around this summer. You know, so
there was a decent Scottish player a few years ago that went to the Portland Timbers, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember there was a thing. He was a goal scorer, and it was that every time they score a goal or something, they chop down a bit of a
tree. Wood. Yeah, yeah.
And give it to the goal scorer. Is it the goal scorer or the man of the match? Or
I think it's a man of the match, but yeah, it's yeah,
it's like a disc of a tree sort of thing or something.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of carved that down or whatever. Portland's weird, man. Pacific Northwest is kind of weird. You know, it's definitely a different vibe than anywhere else I've ever lived. You know, that's for sure. Yeah, MLS, you know, such a weird league. I mean, we've talked about this before. I think I've talked with Rafa specifically about this topic in the past. It's just it's such a weird league because they try to operate like an American league in a sport that's a lot more international, you know, and like the fact that they have a salary cap. It's just weird to me, you know, like no one else, there's no relegation system in the league. It's just, they operate like they're the NBA, you know, and it's, you know, soccer and football, soccer, whatever, is just such a different sport in that regard. And I think like I don't want to go too far of a rabbit hole here with about the MLS, but a lot of times I used to think like they could either be the Chinese league or they could be the French league. Right. The Chinese league, you just get all the washed up guys and pay them a bunch of money, which is what they've done, you know, in the past. Like when they brought in Wayne Rooney and Beckham and stuff like that, you know, guys would get a little bit older in their careers and they'd bring them to MLS.
Yeah.
Or they could be French league, which is, you know, really big outside of PSG, really big on development, you know, of young players before they sell them off elsewhere. And, you know, with the way soccer is getting more popular with younger Americans, you know, you could see that avenue, but they can't decide what they want to be. You know, that's the issue. They're kind of like the Utah Jazz that we brought up earlier. You know, they don't know if they want to contend or they want to tank, right? It's just kind of like, they're just somewhere in the middle. It's such a weird league. And
Or just make money.
yeah. I think that's a real thing. They got the Apple Bunny now from the TV deal. So, you know, they're sitting pretty good there, but you know, I think I'm going to have to try and catch Storm and Sounders games and eventually a Kraken game. I did go to a lower league hockey game a few months back. That place here, they're called the Everett Silver Tips, and that was fun. You know, just kind of like the G League, basically, of the NHL more than anything. So, but yeah, so a lot of different stuff to do out here in Washington. But I'm glad we got to talk about some Knicks today, guys. It's been a while.
Well, hopefully you'll get the Supersonics back at some point as well.
So. Hope so, man. We need it. Yeah, it's a crime. You know, you go to like malls and just sports memorabilia stores here. Mm. Sonics gear is still pretty well stocked, you know, and like you could go get a Sean Kemp jersey right now off the rack, easy, you know, without even thinking twice. And I think they're holding out hope, you know, so hopefully, you know, it happens. But I think the longer it happens, the harder it's going to be for any Seattle team that comes back, because this this area has transitioned now into being a football town more than anything. And then maybe closely behind that is the Mariners in baseball, you know, and they've kind of given up, I think, a little bit on basketball, you know, outside of when the Storm are doing well. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, man, it was a pleasure having you back over on the pod with us. Basically, to anyone who didn't know, this is why Omar basically left, because the schedule is, well, impossible for us to do. We were recording 11 p.m. here, which is 4 o'clock there in Seattle. So it would be hard for us to keep a schedule going, all because 4 o'clock is right in the middle of the day and people do stuff, so things happen. Again, Omar, was a pleasure having you. You know, door is always open for you when you want to come back. Gotta have you before the playoffs to just to discuss some playoffs, if or sooner when you want, because you, again, the doors are wide open. We can do a 4 a.m. for you and well, afternoon for us game. We can do that and record you sleeping on the pod watching a West Ham versus Fulham. Why not?
It gets even worse. Oh, God.
Yes, the worst. If I watched Knicks playing with those teams we mentioned last episode, you can watch that game at 4 a.m.
Might as well start watching the Turkish
enjoy league. Enjoy it. It's fine. Or the Portuguese league, which is quite as bad. I don't know, Alex, if you want to say end on a good note, because we didn't have a Tibbs mention. So if you want to mention him again.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, he's doing well. We almost forgot Omar last week to congratulate Tibbs on his coach of the month. So
yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys something real quick about Tibbs. You know, I know he's kind of climbing up the win standings. I think he's top five now in Knicks history. When he's all said and done, yeah, I mean, obviously it depends on how many years he's going to be in there. Do you guys think he'd be considered a top three coach of the team of all time, probably behind Holtzman and Riley, maybe Van Gundy?
I think it's tied to the playoffs and the playoff success can have. Because it's all about that. Okay, he's been, the best coach we had in years in terms of win percentage and everything. Mm-hmm. It's obviously it's the best part we have of the century, of the decade, the century, the ever. No, not ever, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it depends on the playoff success. It ties up with the Randall thing we were talking before. Yeah. People say, oh, is he one of the greatest Knicks or not? Is he getting close to Ewing and Melo? What's the situation? Well, he needs playoff performances and success. And I think the same ties with Tibbs. If Tibbs gets, even if just the NBA finals, he's probably one of the he's really, really successful as an ex-coach. So because we won titles in the 60s, Ewing, we got to the finals with him in 2000s as well. But Tibbs had his work cut out here, rebuilding us from the depths of hell we were to be a contender now with him. So you were talking about how we have nothing to talk about. A great point we always had here was shitting on Tibbs. And he's not shittable, making this up.
Hard to criticize right him, now. Right? Yeah. It's hard to find any critique right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the guys are injured, and it's not even his fault. It's not all because of overplay. Come on. It's we have nothing to say bad about him. And it's just...
you look at the...
Smiling on the inside.
You were down, like, half the team, basically, against Indiana, and... You know, I want to say for three quarters of that game, maybe a little bit more, you know, you were in it the whole time. And, you know, that's good coaching. That's, you know, the fact that doing that without your key a lot of your key players and with integrating two new guys, I mean, that says a lot, I think, about him as a coach. And, you know, he's been excellent. I think he's in the mix to win Coach of the Year still, you know, for a second time, which, again, becomes, you know, quite the legacy builder. Same way Randall being an all-star for a third time has built up his legacy as a Knick. You know, so it's I think, you know, we're witnessing something here with Tibbs. And, you know, you just hope that there's the playoff success, you know, to get further into the playoffs to really cement it long term, because, you know, he's one of the hardest working guys in the league. You know, no doubt about that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, you know, when he joined, he was obviously seen as somebody that could raise the kind of floor of the franchise. And, you know, coming from a 17-win roster, he certainly did that. And I think, you know, he got his Coach of the Year by coaching a, you know, a roster with guys like Peyton and Reggie Bullock and all these kind of guys that they definitely overachieved with that roster. But now, as we've mentioned earlier in the pod, this is a roster that, you know, you could look at and on paper should be towards a contender. You know, what can Tibbs do with a roster like that? That's the real thing. Does he have the, you know, the system and the schemes to kind of really push it up to that next level? So I think that's what will define him in the end, as to, you know, it's great that you can fight hard in every possession and you've got these great defensive instincts into these players, and you can really overachieve with an ordinary squad. But you know, now that the squad has raised that level, we've got a superstar on the squad. What does he do with that? You know, and it goes back to his Bulls days where, you know, he had Derrick Rose and Noah, and he had this really fantastic roster. And yeah, the injuries played a part, but, you know, he couldn't get them over the hump. And it's just, I think that is, as I said, what defines him, what will define him.
Yep.
Yeah, man. We're going to finish with this. Hell is frozen over. We are talking all praise for Tibbs right here in this podcast.
End the episode now. Cut out the audio.
Yeah. Press conclude and it's done. Once again, Omar, thank you so much for joining us again. In a different position, you weren't leading and doing all the
weird time skip thing. I'm not gonna
come on,
lie.
Come yeah, on, yeah. Talk.
Yeah, it's very weird for you guys. Free.
you were free, and when you ever want to jump back in, you know where to find us on WhatsApp. Just not complaining anymore, which is great. Everybody listening, thank you so much for listening. Oh,
go on. No, off you go. No, I was just going to say, we really needed you last week, Omar, when we went down half hour rabbit
hole. I was listening to that. And I was just like, they're talking about Cle Anthony early. And I was just like, oh my God, what is happening? You know, we're talking about Rafa and, you know, the machinations of the Portuguese league and everything. I was like, man, what is going on?
We need therapy, direction. Omar. We just,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We lack direction. We need you guiding us. So, you see, this was more structured. You went into a bit of a rant about many teams. So, you picked up all our randomness.
Yeah.
That's good. As I was saying, thanks so much for everyone for listening. Follow us on Twitter at WWNixPodcast, where we talk shenanigans. I've been a little bit off Twitter because you were talking about following different sports somewhere, and I've got a bit back into WWE wrestling and all that jazz, and it's hard to follow many things late at night, and so I'm picking. I have one eye on the Knicks, one eye on the WWE, and I only have two thumbs to tweet. So yeah, never mind. But follow us on @WWNixPodcast. Follow us on Spotify. Continue to listening. Continue to support. We appreciate all of you. Thank you so much for both of you to talk Knicks. And this is no longer therapy. This is just enjoyment, and it's lovely. All the years of pain. Well, thank you so much, guys. See you next week.